welcome to the Andy Staples Show, and yeah, today's the day that I pay the piper because I'm not very smart. I made a very bad bet with my co-host Ari Wasserman. I gave him way too many points, and honestly, it didn't matter how many points I gave him. I could have bet him straight up, still would have lost. My faith in LSU, much like my faith in Pittsburgh last year, not rewarded. Ari, feel free to gloat.
Let me ask you this. Will you give me 10 points over any other spread ever again?
No. Never again.
Okay, so this is shock therapy then. So okay, no more good. Pitt. You got Pitt out of your system with mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And now altering spreads by double-digit points is now, I mean, you're going to be a professional gambler when we're done with all this. So I'm proud of you. And, you know, it's... This challenge, I think, is going to be something that you'll be able to triumph, though, because I remember the back in the day when you're trying to gain weight for your football team, weren't you just downing jars of peanut butter and 2-liter bottles of Mountain Dew before bed and all that? Like, your body has been through it all.
Yeah, whole pizzas. Yeah, it's been through hell. And, you know, so we're going to do the Will Levis challenge. And if you've been listening, you know exactly what we're talking about. But if you're new here, Will Levis is the starting quarterback at Kentucky. He transferred from Penn State last year. A video came out of him over the summer of him eating a banana, peel and all, and he did not seem fazed by it one bit. So I'm hoping that I can just channel the spirit of Will Levis today and that I'll be good to go. But first, let's talk about how we got here. And I gave Ari 15 points on the LSU-UCLA game. I said LSU, much more talented team. They've fixed the issues that that plagued them last year, and that they are going to stomp UCLA. And that is not what happened. UCLA dominated them on both lines of scrimmage. UCLA looked fantastic. I apologize to the Bruins. Can't believe I underestimated you like that. I did say I thought you were going to be the best Chip Kelly UCLA team yet, but I think it's more than that. I think that they're probably a contender in the Pac-12 South, if not for the Pac-12 title. We'll see how this goes, but they looked really good. So I apologize to you. Hopefully this punishment that I'll be submitting myself to will satisfy you. If not, just let me know, and we'll see if any more penance needs to be paid. But the giving of the 15 is the problem, as Ari pointed out. If I'd gone with just what the line was, which was at the time we made the bet 4.5, I don't look as stupid. I still look stupid, but not as stupid. But let's just take a trip down and listen to what some folks who are a little better at this than me said when I mentioned it. And we'll start with our friend Stanford Steve from ESPN, who's, you know, master of the line, bad beats, knows all this stuff. Here's what he said about it. So, am I insane for giving Ari 15 points in that game?
Yes, you are.
Short and sweet. Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, we go to Dan Katz from Pardon My Take, Big Cat. He also, you know, pretty thorough, you know, seasoned, experienced gambler. Here's what he said. I actually have a bet this weekend with my podcast co-host Ari Wasserman, and I'm an idiot. I gave him too many points, but I thought I needed to get him to take the bet. He's not as bullish on LSU as I am this year, so. The line has actually moved down to LSU minus 3. It was LSU minus 4.5 when we made this bet. But I am that confident that UCLA has not had to face this kind of collection of athletes before, and that they're just not that. Even though UCLA will probably be the best UCLA team of the Chip Kelly era at UCLA, and they might even win the Pac-12 South, I just don't think they're going to have a chance against LSU. So I gave Ari 15 points.
What?
And if I lose, yeah, I know. If I lose, have you seen the video of the Kentucky quarterback, Will Levis, eating a banana?
Yes, yes, yes.
I have to eat a banana like that if I lose. Now, Ari has to eat a banana like that if LSU wins by more than 15.
15?
So, the Will Levis challenge is the stakes. Okay, so there you are. There you have it. It was a dumb bet. I am willing to admit that it was a dumb bet. There's nothing more I can say. So now it's time to accept my punishment. Ari, I have here a banana. I am ready to eat this banana. Are you going to allow me to eat this banana?
What are the other choices? Don't I get to pick?
Or should I eat this banana?
What is that, like a plantain? What is that?
That is not a plantain. It's a different kind of banana. It starts with an M. I can't remember the name exactly, but yes, it is it's a rather small banana. I thought I might try to slip that past you, but I had a feeling you'd know. I have many bananas in my kitchen right now at various stages of ripeness. There are some yellow ones. There are some completely brown ones. And then there's this one that's kind of in the middle. This looks as close to the one that Will Levis ate as possible. He said it tasted like banana bread, so I am hoping he's right.
I'm gonna do you a favor, Andy.
All right, go for it.
Do you have a knife?
No, he didn't. Knife.
Do you see at the end though? The end. Oh, you can chop that part off because that would be the part that would gross me out the most. On both sides, you know the part that you're supposed to. You're actually supposed to peel the banana from the other side, by the way.
Well,
the one
from this side.
But I would let you chop that off. No, from the other side is actually the correct way.
I've been doing it wrong my whole life?
We've all been doing it wrong our whole life. If you put your thumb into the middle of the end there, not that you will now, and pull, it pulls out perfectly. Peel it.
Unfortunately, not allowed.
But I was going to give you a little bit of an olive branch because if when I was thinking about doing the Will Levis challenge, eating that those two parts of it were the hardest to think about.
This part on the short end does not bother me. I'm not worried about this.
Okay.
The stem itself does look like it would bother me a little bit.
You don't have to eat the stem, Andy. We'll see how you feel.
We'll see how I feel. All right, here we go. Ari, you may have to vamp here for a little bit. So if you've got some things to say, feel free to say them. You can say whatever you want. The floor is yours. Yeah. I may be a little busy.
Because before you were going to eat that banana, I was going to say that I thought the line was tricky, and I thought that the UCLA game was going to be in a position it would be like one of those weird close games that you would think were supposed to be a blowout, and it wasn't. I was very surprised by how UCLA controlled the line of scrimmage, and wow, you're really handling. Is that okay? All right. He's in the middle of a chew, but is it bad?
I'm not going to lie. This is freaking delicious. I might do this from now on.
So this is easy for you? Because I told you it was going to be easy. I knew it was going
to
be easy.
I didn't know. You were scared to death.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like banana bread. It's great.
What do you mean it tastes like banana bread?
It does. This is amazing. Like, I might start eating bananas like this from now on.
Would you actually eat a banana like that? He's actually enjoying it.
This is good.
No, because I was reading online that there's actually like a ton of nutrients in the peel.
It's very healthy.
It's actually healthy for you. I kind of just want to take a bite out of one just to see what all the fuss is about.
I think if I try to eat a green one, because I noticed some other people trying to do it on TV this weekend, and I feel bad. Everybody's kind of done this by now. And like our friend Richard Johnson dipped it in mayonnaise, which is like the worst thing ever I can imagine. But I don't think I can eat the stem. I think I might choke on
the stem.
Don't eat
the stem.
I'm not going to eat the stem. Yeah. All right. So, yes, I've got more bananas in there. I might do this again. That was awesome.
Good for you. Good for you.
And I'm going to be so regular the next few days.
Well, you know, you got the potassium in there, and I'm happy that you paid off your challenge.
I'm not going to cramp up during this podcast for sure.
I'm happy that you're not in any terrible pain or disgust, because when watching you eat the mayonnaise was kind of a brutal thing for people watching it too. But honestly, are you with me on that with UCLA? Like, where are you? Oh, he ate the smaller banana now.
You're gonna have to look really up, good too.
Because somebody, were you the one that sent me the link about how a certain type of banana, or the common banana that we're all used to eating and buying at the stores, is going extinct?
The Cavendish, yes, is a big thing in the banana world.
Yeah. We've been delving deep into the banana world. He just ate the second one. So the other one was like the size.
Everybody should do this. This is unbelievable. This is so good.
Because I thought if I were in that position to have to do it, I would have gotten one that was more brown on the outside, I think. So it would have been easier to eat.
I don't think that would have been that good. So if you eat bananas fairly regularly, if you go with one that is very overripe, that is very brown, that fruit inside gets really mushy. And if you're a texture person, that's going to be a problem. This one, the fruit was still somewhat firm, and I think it helped a lot. Now, the smaller one that I just had is it's not a Cavendish. It's a tangier banana, and that tasted even better. And seriously, like, there's, I don't know why I haven't been eating peels all my life. Like, who needs to throw them away?
I might go take a bite out of it after this podcast just to see what the experience is like. Banana bread is intriguing, but yeah, well, congratulations. I'm happy you completed it. It's another thing off your Andy Staples bucket list, especially your food bucket list.
We're running out of things to do. We've got to figure some of this out. But yeah, I think this is, wow, this is a revelation. I'm going to do this again. This may be how I eat bananas.
You're actually going to eat it like that again.
No, you'd probably be able to tell. I might have a weird look on my face or kind of, feeling in my voice. That was really, it tasted more like dessert than fruit.
Interesting. So the peel had a different flavor?
Not necessarily different flavor. It just sort of changed the texture a tad. And yeah, I guess it did make it feel a little sweeter. Or maybe not sweeter. It was the texture. It made it chewier. And the sweetness plus the chewy gives you that feeling of kind of a cake or a thicker bread like banana bread.
I'm kind of dumbfounded. I thought it would just be like weird. I don't ever want to do this again.
I thought it would be like I tolerated it. It's fine. But no, I liked it. Like when we get done, I may eat another banana just like that.
Well, it's funny. I'm happy that the podcast could help brighten your culinary habits. I'll go take a bite out of one when we're done here.
We'll be right back after these words. It's a new day in the Big 12. This podcast is dropping on Friday morning. We're recording on Thursday afternoon. Unless something crazy happens between now and when you're listening to this thing, there's a very good chance that the Big 12 members will be voting on new members, and that sometime Friday afternoon, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF will be having celebrations of going to the Big 12. I don't know. The plan is to put them in there in 2023. I don't know if they're going to announce that tomorrow. The American has a 27-month exit notice policy, which that would put us at December 2023, which would put us into the 2023 football season. So the three members of the American probably going to have to negotiate that out by paying a little more. So we'll see. They have a $10 million exit fee as well. But big day for those schools, Ari, that have been trying to change conferences, and a big day for the remaining members of the Big 12, because when Texas and Oklahoma announced they were leaving, it was, what's going to happen next? Is the American going to try to raid them? Will somebody pick off one or two and then the rest fall apart? They have stayed together, and now they will reemerge out of the cocoon as a 12-team league.
Two thoughts. Ready? One, could the Big 12 have done any better?
I don't think so.
I agree.
So I wrote this in Thursday's Dear Andy column. I love, from a pure fan football fan standpoint, I love this lineup, because there are going to be years where there are 8 or 9 legitimate title contenders in that league. And not because they're all mediocre, because they're all kind of good. Like Kansas, probably not. But and there will be, there'll be programs that are having down years. But think about this. So Oklahoma's won the Big 12 the past 6 seasons. We get that. But Baylor, TCU, Kansas State, they've all shared or won the title in the past 10 years. Baylor, TCU, and Iowa State have played, I'm sorry, Oklahoma State also has won the title in the past 10 years. Baylor, TCU, and Iowa State have played in the championship game since it was brought back in 2017. UCF has had an undefeated season. BYU has had 4 seasons of 9 wins or more in the last 10 years. Cincinnati had an undefeated regular season last year. Houston won the American, won the Peach Bowl against Florida State in Tom Herman's first year. These are programs that are all going to be competitive. It's going to be really fun watching this league.
So you want to hear my second comment?
Yeah.
I guess there are more questions than comments, but these programs that are added to the Big 12, universally, all of them, have kind of had moments or thoughts or prayers that one day they'd be able to step up into Power 5 land.
Right.
Is this new conference that they're joining, in the eyes of the world, going to be that much different than the world that they already exist in? Because I understand what you just said about the expansion of that league and how it's going to be entertaining and fun. But I don't know that I agree with you that removing two nationwide national brands that actually have a chance, one more so than the other in Oklahoma, to play for and maybe win a national championship. Mm-hmm. And then replacing them with other teams that were considered group of five before is going to do anything from a national competitive standpoint as it pertains to the respect of
you're disagreeing right? with
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I know what you're saying and I agree with what you're saying. But I'm wondering, in a world where in 5 or 6 years, if there's an expanded playoff and there's more expansions of leagues and merging of leagues, the group of five, power five model to a certain extent is probably just not going to exist anymore because things
it's
are going
to be different. It's not going to exist. It doesn't exist past 2022. Once these things change, it's going to be the power two and everybody else. There will be an upper middle class that's the ACC and the Pac-12. And a middle class that's the Big 12, and then everybody else.
So then I'm just trying to understand if this is actually a day of worth rejoicing if you're those four programs, or if really life is going to be kind of business as usual in a year or two when the new playoff is, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, is the perception of their league going to be that much different?
It doesn't matter what the perception of their league is. The new playoff, unless everybody's incredibly stupid and cutting off their nose to spite their face because they're mad at Greg Sankey. The new playoff is going to allow for the champion of that league to make the playoff.
But wouldn't the American also be in that conversation? Because like we would have thought about that before, because the expansion of the playoff came out before the expansion of conferences came out. And the Americans champion would have probably made it in that category as well, right?
Do we know it's going to be top six though? That was the proposal. We don't know what they're going to come up with now, because they're going to say it's consolidated a little bit differently now.
Yeah, well, the only point I'm trying to make is that, and I remember there were times where Cincinnati thought it was going to join the Big 12 three or four or five, 6 years ago. I can't remember when it was.
Right.
And I went down and I covered a game. I covered a game at Cincinnati. Is this team a Power 5 team? And what would this mean to the addition of the Big 12 whenever that happened 5 or 6 years ago? And I just wanted to make the point that this feels different than it would have had that happen then, in terms of just the significance of what it means for their football programs. Because all four of these programs, in my opinion, would have been in a position in their current state in the AAC to continue to make the playoff in that expanded format one way or the other. So this isn't just like a Willy Wonka golden ticket to only four group of five teams that can now compete at the highest level. That would have existed anyway. So I just am kind of, I just don't know.
All,
like if
all this is the same thing that happened before. This is what happened. Remember, the Big East was a BCS conference, which is the equivalent to what the Power Five is now.
Mm-hmm.
So there were six BCS AQ conferences. The Big East was one of them. When the Big East got picked apart by the ACC and the Big 12 and the Big 10, they took a bunch of teams from Conference USA. This is no different than that. And we changed how we perceive it from going to, we went from there are six BCS AQ conferences to there's the Power Five and the Group of Five. And now we'll change it again. But I do think this time around, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be so far ahead of everybody else in terms of money. And really, I mean, this new lineup versus the Pac-12 versus the ACC not named Clemson, from a competitive standpoint, is it really that different?
Just no flagship.
Right, right. But I would argue the Pac-12 doesn't have a flagship right now either.
I think you could make that case, yes. My only point and thought was that when you're a group of five team before the expansion discussion existed, you know, a month or two ago, the entire point of wanting to be accepted into a Power Five league was to legitimize your program. Mm-hmm. And this is a new exciting frontier for these four teams, but I don't know that this is a legitimizing move the way it would have been had it happened last year.
Ari, let me ask you a question. You've dreamed your whole life of somebody handing you a $100 bill, and that's okay. All you've ever wanted. If somebody offers to hand you a $20 bill, do you tell them no?
No.
Okay. That's what happened here. That's exactly what happened here. They took an incremental step forward. Now, they are in a better position than the teams in the conference they're leaving the next time all of this swirls around.
Yeah, I guess it's incremental improvement to the hope that you might be in a ideal situation one day, and this is much better than doing nothing.
Exactly.
If you think it's much better than doing nothing, I don't know. Like, I do. In my opinion,
Michael Resco know doesn't. That the, I do.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. The AAC last year and the Big 12 as it currently stands, which one is better?
Okay. So you've got Cincinnati in the AAC last year. Cincinnati and Iowa State are probably your comparable teams, right? Because we're taking Oklahoma and Texas out of the equation.
Yep, yep. It's probably still the Big 12.
It's still the Big 12 because of the drop-off at the bottom of the American. So it's definitely still the Big 12. And that's it. That's what it is. It's incremental improvement. Yes, they would love to be in whatever we're going to call a Power 5 conference in 2 years. But that's not possible. They're not asking. They're not offering.
Yeah, is it more about legitimizing yourself or just having a seat at the playoff table? What's the most important thing to these people?
Having a seat at the playoff table.
So they had it already.
Did they? Well, okay, here's the thing. The eight remaining may not have. If they'd have said, we're just going to be this eight-team league, the other leagues might have said, wait, you're just going to have eight? No.
No, I'm talking about the American teams.
Well, yeah, but which would you rather be with your seat at the playoff table? Because remember, if the auto bids are going to go to the highest-ranked conference champions, if you're playing in what is considered a better league, you will be higher ranked as the conference champion.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like if we went down the list, though, you know, Cincinnati and Iowa State, right? Those are the comparable teams.
Right now.
Who's UCF?
Over the last 10 years, Oklahoma State,
yeah.
TCU.
Yeah, over the last, you're right. I'm trying to make a
Baylor's
case.
Been and really
I'm probably
good.
I'm probably wrong on that. I feel like if I were to buy stock in a Texas team, would you buy stock in SMU right now with all the changes that are happening in college football, or would you buy stock in any of the other Texas Big 12 teams?
Buy stock in Houston.
Right. Would you buy stock in Houston in SMU or TCU in Texas Tech or Baylor in Texas Tech?
I think TCU and Baylor can take advantage of that just as well as SMU or Houston can. But yeah. Houston, more than anything, because they're in the town that has the most good players. You know,
that's true.
In terms of recruiting hotbeds, Atlanta and Houston are the two best cities in America right now. You know, or Atlanta, Houston, Miami. That's pretty select company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I just was trying to play devil's advocate a little bit just because I feel like all these teams in the American, the best news that they could have ever gotten in the history of their programs was the expansion of the playoff. This, I think, is secondary to that.
Right. And the thing about it is, like, I remember back in the day trying to explain to Memphis fans that just because you got in the Big East doesn't mean that you've made it, because the Big East is not going to be what you think it is. And it's kind of the same thing here, but I think this time around, because all this has happened before, I think the UCF and the Cincinnati and the Houston, the BYU fans understand that. But like BYU, for example, had to join a conference. Notre Dame can make the playoff as an independent. Nobody else can. So BYU needed to join a conference, and this was a way better option than crawling back to the Mountain West that you tried to destroy with a lot of the same people still there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly a nice-looking conference, and the thing that I will say is that it's a very entertaining one to watch. And I think that as consumers of the sport, that's the most important thing. I don't know that the champion will be perceived as good as the other two big Power Fives, but I don't know that the Big 12 champion in 2024 right now would be viewed any better or worse than the Pac-12 champion would be now. I mean, maybe if there's a wholesale change in the Oregon situation, or USC wakes up and accomplishes, you know, what I think is cap- you know, is possible.
Or like right now, our pals at UCLA keep getting better.
Yeah. By the way, I'm all in on UC. I don't know about week one overreactions, and we could talk about that again if you want. But yeah, like, I was super impressed with them.
I was too. And again, I am sorry I doubted you, Bruins. I feel terrible, but at least thank you for giving me a new tasty treat whenever I want one.
Because yeah, you actually owe them
cheap and plentiful.
Yeah, they did you a favor, bud.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about that. All right, Ari, we're not going to make any stupid bets this week because Ari still has to pay off a stupid bet from last year. I had forgotten about this, but the listeners never forget, Ari, and that's one thing that we both need to remember. You had bet me on the Virginia Tech Miami game. I believe I had Miami and you had Virginia Tech, and I can't remember what the point spread was, but Miami covered and I won. And your punishment was supposed to be that you take the one chip challenge. And this is a tortilla chip that is so spicy that it comes in a coffin and you only get one of them because that's all you probably can handle. I believe one of those arrived at your house this week.
I have it. Yes.
All right.
When I was supposed to do it, by the way, I got COVID. So that's the reason why this happened. And I'm very much not looking forward to it. And in fact, I was supposed to eat it today on Thursday, September 9th, as we were recording this. But Andy showed me some, what was it, Mercy? Because I have a dinner with coworkers of my fiance's
yes,
real estate firm.
We don't need you having gastrointestinal issues at
like,
that dinner.
Is this? I just hope it's not something that's going to like, it might be miserable for a half hour, but I hope it's not something that makes me miserable for more than a day. I hope it doesn't
do permanent damage either. That would be bad.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about permanent damage. I just don't want to be sick an hour and a half after I did it.
Well,
it's like you got to eat a banana and you're fine.
Oh, I mean, this is why they call it gambling, Ari.
And you also got mad about the UCLA bet, and now this is like your revenge toward me.
It's not my revenge. You lost the bet. I mean, you don't want to be a welcher, see the thing? Yeah, let's see it. Oh, wow. It is in the shape of a coffin with a dripping skull on the front.
25 calories. Ooh, boy. In this chip, bud. 25 calories.
That's a hefty
Carolina
chip.
Reaper. It's one extremely hot tortilla chip. So we got a few weeks before this.
Yeah. That gets paid off next week unless we want to do something incredibly stupid on my favorite line of the week. Can I tell you my favorite line of the week, Ari?
Andy, before we do that, okay. I am so sorry. But I kind of want you to have to do this with me. Is there anything that I can do to make you eat this chip on the same podcast as me? Is there a bet that we can make?
Okay. All right.
And I've got a game for you.
Oh, I've got a game for you too.
Okay, but I want to tell you my game first.
Give me your game.
Ready? Tennessee and Pitt.
Not a chance.
The black hole. The black hole of college football results.
You're asking me to take Pitt as a road favorite? There is no chance in hell I am ever taking Pitt for any reason again, but especially not Pitt as a road favorite. No.
But like, absolutely not. I'm just saying, if you had to bet any game in any sporting event in the history of sports, isn't that the last game on earth you would want to touch in any scenario? Like, what could happen in that game? What angle could you have on that game where you'd be like, yeah, I want to play
that
game?
That's one of those mobsters have kidnapped you and are just messing with you, and they basically put the stakes of your life on that game because they know that you can't possibly win.
Can we just pick it for fun then?
We can pick it, yes. Let's pick it.
I just want to watch you pick this game for fun.
I think Pitt covers. I really do. But I don't want to say it.
I'm just going to say, I don't know, man. I just wanted to hear your side and we'll see.
Pitt, like, it's just like, this is great radio. It's Pitt minus three. That's the line. I think Pitt covers. But I honestly have no idea.
Okay, what's your game? Sorry, thanks for indulging me on that.
Okay, we can put this on here. If I lose this, I'll eat the chip with you. Okay. Kansas plus 25 and a half on the Teal at Coastal Carolina.
And what side are you on?
Oh, I'm on the side of the jet skiers from Dirty Myrtle. Always.
Okay.
Give me the shots. Okay.
So if they don't cover, what's the spread?
25.5.
Yeah.
A Sunbelt team is favored by 25.5 points over a Big 12 team. You will never see this line again. Never.
So you're going to get 25.5, even if it continues to move, because it is moving. So 25.5 is your locked in number.
Should we go with let's go with the line at kickoff.
Okay. I want you to eat this with me more than anything. And I think I'm going to bet Coastal Carolina on my own so that if you win and get away from the chip, then at least I make money.
Okay. All right.
Like, I'm going to hedge my own happiness.
So whatever the bet MGM line is at kickoff is what we're going with. And I have Coastal Carolina minus whatever.
Okay. Yeah. We'll just say 25.5 for now. And if it's any different at kickoff, then I'll let you know.
Cause it's still, I mean, it's still probably going to be, even if it drops, it's still probably going to be Coastal Carolina by more than 3 touchdowns, which a Sunbelt team by more than 3 touchdowns against a Big 12 team. Like
Kansas this to line win that game outright is 15-1.
Wow. I mean, okay. Has a line like this ever happened?
Not that I've seen, and I don't know when it, like, if you could even think about a time when a Power 5 team was really, really good. A Group of 5 team, excuse me, was really, really good enough to ever be in a situation where they might be. Because you rarely see 26-point lines in interconference play. Conference play, unless you have the Alabama of the world playing the Vanderbilt of the conference. It just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it is crazy. I'm trying to think, like, 2018 UCF played Georgia Tech,
Coastal Carolina is favored by more against Kansas than Georgia is against UAB.
That's amazing. That's insane. Okay, that spread was 7.5. UCF by 7.5 over Georgia Tech. UCF coming off an undefeated season, Georgia Tech not being very good at all. So that is a wow. Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to see this. I really don't think we'll ever see a spread like this again. So by all means, let's bet it and we'll see what happens. I may be eating the chip with you because that I don't care. That feels really high.
Yeah, I want to say that I'll thank you.
I kind of want to
putting
try
your
the
neck
chip.
On the
is
line.
That, is that
I,
so bad?
I feel like I knew it. I knew you'd want to. Because I know you want to conquer challenges.
But I don't like super spicy. I like spicy food. I do eat a lot of spicy food. But the super spicy, the stunt spicy, I tend to stay away from. But I'm just curious here. I really am.
Okay.
So well,
I'm happy. Okay.
Here we are.
Okay. We'll do it as a team.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of things as a team lately. So
that's exactly right. Exactly. While we're on the subject of UAB in Georgia, that line, that over-under, that game, I find very interesting because you have the reports out of Athens that JT Daniels sustained some sort of like oblique injury, some sort of core injury, took a shot in the Clemson game, may or may not be playing or maybe limited. Carson Beck being prepared to play. This is UAB is obviously a Group of 5 opponent, Conference USA team, an underdog. But if you've paid attention to Bill Clark's team over the years, it's a pretty good roster. They are well coached. They do what they're supposed to. And with Georgia, we still have no idea which of those offensive skill guys are going to play or are going to play a decent sized role. Like Kyrus Jackson last week played on punt return, did not play receiver. So, like, Georgia at this point is missing about 5 guys who would be pass-catching targets who could potentially just blow a game open like this. But I think, given what we think is going to happen, that this is going to be Georgia's defense in control of the game, I don't know that they cover 24.5.
Yeah, I don't know that I would want to touch the 24.5, but I feel like the under's the play here.
Yeah,
I feel like see like a 40 or like a 35 to 10. Wait, what is it? 45.5,
45 and a half. 10,
42 to 3 type of game potentially. And I want to ask you this question. Is UAB going to score a touchdown in this game? After what we watched last week?
Clemson didn't. I have a hard
time. Clemson get a yard?
They got a couple, but not many. Once you took the sacks out. So, here's the question. You know, does Georgia at a certain point throw a bunch of second team guys in and UAB then has a chance to score? I say second team. Probably have to go third team because Georgia rotates a lot of the D linemen. And their first two groups are probably going to be tough to score on for UAB. So, yeah, that's the thing. The Georgia thing is interesting to me. You and I have both picked Georgia to win the national title. And I came away from the Clemson game not particularly concerned about their offense just because there were so many guys out. You know, Kyrus Jackson, Dominique Blaylock, Darnell Washington. I don't know if we're ever going to see Eric Gilbert. I'm not particularly worried about that one. But those are people who were expected to play a major, major role in the passing game. George Pickens is supposed to potentially come back later in the year, maybe very late this season. He's their best receiver. I feel like they could have a very good offense by the end of the season if everybody's healthy. The defense will get them through until that point, though.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like betting the under, too, in this situation would be the most miserable thing in the world to bet because it would just take the entertainment of watching the game away, and you'd be like one weird fumble in the red zone away from not covering the game. But, you know, I don't know that, you know, you never know, too. Like, Georgia's offense could just show up and post 52 yeah. points, and that wouldn't be surprising
also,
at all. But
also, don't forget that Georgia's defense might put the offense in some very favorable positions.
Sure. Or score themselves.
Yeah.
Like they did against Clemson. Yeah.
Yeah. So that feels like a don't touch for me.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Let's go to the big game at noon on Saturday. Oregon at Ohio State. We don't know what the deal is with Kayvon Thibodeau exactly, but it doesn't look great. I don't know that changes anything. Ohio State is a two touchdown favorite, a 14.5 point favorite. I think Ohio State handles this game pretty handily. I just need to see more from Oregon's offense. Like they need to open it. It feels like there was about a two game stretch. There was a Pac-12 championship game and a Rose Bowl, Justin Herbert's senior year, when they said, you know what? We have this 6'4", 240-pound quarterback with a rocket arm who's also a really good runner. We're going to run him some and really scare the defense. And they did. And they were amazing for those two games. But it doesn't look like that's what they want to be offensively most of the time. And so I just, like, you can't beat a team like Ohio State unless you take a lot more chances offensively.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Are we sure, like 100% sure, that Oregon is better than Minnesota?
No, I don't think we're 100% sure. I think we're fairly sure.
I mean, Oregon's got better top-end athletes, probably. So I would give Oregon the nod.
Yeah, Minnesota
here.
Doesn't have a Noah Sewell, doesn't have a Justin Flo.
But as a team right now, I don't know that what we saw from Oregon last week is an indication of the high-flying, interesting, non-conference matchup that we're wanting.
Minnesota looked better than Oregon last week.
I feel like this game is a helmet game.
Maybe right.
I think Ohio State's going to cover with ease in this game.
That disappoints me. I was excited about this, and I thought, okay, this is a chance to kind of test where Mario Cristobal's roster's at as he tries to make it look like these other teams. I think you're right. I think that they're just not there yet. And they may have to make some schematic changes if they ever want to get there.
Well, the thing too is that the reason why I'm saying this is Oregon has maybe the best player in college football on its roster, and we're not sure if he's going to play. Or even if he does play, what percentage of health he's going to be. So that guy is as close to a Joey Bosa, Chase Young, to use their opponent's example, as you'll find in college football. And in the time that he was on the field against Fresno State, The guy had a strip sack and was disrupting.
Yeah, he was unstoppable.
An animal. So if you take that guy off of the field and you know, because the number one thing here is CJ Stroud continuing to find himself, and he'll be able to find himself a lot easier without, you know, Thibodeau in his face. And, you know, to me, I just don't know if even if Oregon is playing top-notch defense, because they do have some dudes on the defensive side of the ball, if anybody in college football is going to be able to stop Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. And also, I just don't know if their offense will be able to score what they need to score to keep this within two touchdowns, especially considering the fact that Ohio State's getting their two top cornerbacks back who weren't on the field against Minnesota. So, you know, and it's a game that's in Ohio Stadium. It's at noon. You know, I trust that, you know, Cristobal will have his guys up, and Oregon will probably play better than they did last week, because it's a huge non-conference game and an opportunity for them to, you know, kind of show the world that they're back. I just don't know if they are equipped from a talent standpoint and, you know, good enough as a team to actually compete with a team that's, a legitimate national championship contender this year.
Staying with the theme of Pac-12 traveling to the Big Ten country, do we agree that Washington, as a 7-point underdog at Michigan, that game is a stay away at all costs? Because I realize that if you just go by week one results, you say, oh, that sounds easy. Michigan covers easily. That's one of those I feel like week one may have lied to us about one or both of those teams.
Yes, I would take the points in this scenario, which is crazy to say considering the fact that Washington just lost to an FCS team.
To Montana, yeah.
And I think how many points did they score again? Three?
Yeah, they didn't look good at all.
So, yes, I just don't know if I am comfortable laying a touchdown for Michigan right now against any other Power 5 team. Because, as you know, by watching Michigan in the last few years, sometimes it looks really, really good, but when it goes bad in a hurry.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I know they're at home. I know it's the game that everybody's been looking forward to. I know that they're similarly talented. I know Michigan has looked better, but they also lost Ronnie Bell for the year, yep, which is a huge loss.
I felt like he's been their best receiver for the past few years. And
he's a stud.
He's the one who makes tough catches. And he's kind of their ideal.
Did you see
ideal,
that one last week with the one hand on the sideline?
Yes.
Did you see that one?
Yeah, he's kind of their ideal. Like, this is the ideal. This is what Jim Harbaugh dreams of. Like, under-recruited guy in Kansas City that they unearth, and he turns out to be great. The problem is you need some of the guys that everybody thought would be great. And, you know, Michigan gets some of those, but not enough to hang with Ohio State. The question is, do they have enough to hang with Washington, which also pretty talented roster? So I just can't touch this one because I don't know what happens here. I don't know if week one told us anything accurate about either of these two teams.
Yeah. I don't feel particularly passionate about either side. And in this position, I would just always err towards taking a touchdown. But if Michigan won 42-10, I would not be surprised either. Or if Michigan lost 35-10, I wouldn't be surprised.
So another marquee non-conference game involving a Pac-12 team. Texas A&M heads to Denver. This game's not in Boulder. It's in Denver at the Broncos Stadium. Colorado and the Aggies. The Aggies are a 17-point favorite. And I'm not this big of a sicko, but I kind of am. So this morning, I was doing a radio show with Aaron Murray, and the former Georgia quarterback, and it was on the SEC channel on SiriusXM. So we were only talking about SEC schools, and we were talking about quarterbacks who made their debuts. And Aaron, one of the winningest starting quarterbacks in SEC history, I trust his feelings on this stuff. He said he was a little worried about Haynes King, that it felt like he was a little bit robotic against Kent State. So I popped that game on, and I watched that game. And that's exactly what it looked like. It looked like he was trying to, you know, it was, okay, now I do this, now I do this, now I do this, now I do this. That's going to be a lot tougher against a better team. And look, Texas A&M is so much more talented than Colorado. Like, Texas A&M should be able to roll the ball out there, let their offensive line lean on Colorado's defensive line, run the ball with Isaiah Spiller and Devon Achain, and be fine. But I want to see more because I want to see if they can be the team that can compete with Alabama.
Last week I took Kent plus 30, and Kent pretty good had the ball inside the 20 with like a minute left, down by 31, and they missed a 24-yard field goal. So I'm
it's a killer.
Not feeling good about that. But I don't know. I thought King looked fine. I don't know what it was, his first start. My lean here is Texas A&M.
I think they beat Colorado by 17. Part of this is me wanting to see Texas A&M take that next step. And, you know, if you are taking that next step, this is the kind of game where you go in and flex. And, you know, a lot of the country's going to be watching this. It's an opponent you never see. Used to be a conference opponent. And I think I want to see more. I just want to see more out of their passing game.
Are we at the point right now where we're viewing Texas A&M as a legitimate contender in the SEC and a national championship contender? Is that the way that we're supposed to be viewing them?
We're trying to decide if we need to view them that way.
How do their fans view them?
I don't think that – I think their fans, if you give them a couple pickle juice and vodka shots, which by the way, they do down there in College Station, and it's delicious. You do a few of those – and they're going to say, no, not at the same level yet. Still not there. Getting there, still not there.
Yeah.
But
because if you're there,
I want to believe that I want to believe somebody has a chance against Alabama this year. I want to believe that. And I think Georgia might. Obviously, if their offense gets going and they get those guys back healthy, I think there's a good chance that they have a chance. But I want to see if somebody in the West can actually compete. And I don't know. I'm not there yet with A&M.
I know that Alabama is on its own playing field, and I know that doing what Nick Saban has done is impossible to replicate because he's a wizard or a witch. I don't know, however you want to put it. But, you know, I did cover a team that's supposedly in that galaxy for a long time.
Right.
And even they never asserted their dominance week after week after week against everybody, no matter what. Ohio State has a ton of closer games than they should, and they have been susceptible to losing games that they shouldn't. And there were Purdue's, and there were Iowa's, and there were weird games against Maryland, and all the time that team never – the way that Alabama continually just beats the crap out of everybody is almost more impressive to me than just winning every game.
It is.
It's just like they don't even sweat. And I know last year they had a close call against Ole Miss, and I know they've lost to Auburn at times.
But it wasn't even that close, Ari. Like Ole Miss didn't have an onside kick at the end of the game. Like it was Alabama would go up by 14, then Ole Miss would cut it to 7. Alabama would go up by 14. It wasn't even that close.
Yeah. When's the last time Alabama almost lost to or lost to a team that was clearly inferior? Hmm. Because it's like the only way that we could ever
– 2015 Ole Miss,
Yeah.
But that was a good Ole Miss team. That team won 11 games.
The only hope that we have for an Alabama upset in the middle of the year is a rivalry game or a team that's as good as Georgia, and they don't even play in the regular season this year. It's like when you think about coaching dominance, there are too many stats and NFL draft and national title numbers and recruiting numbers that you can pull up for Alabama. But there are a lot of teams, you know, or at least a 5 or 6 that recruit at a similar level. But nobody exerts their dominance more consistently on a day-to-day basis more than Alabama, even in games that people aren't paying attention to. It's like,
let's use Alabama's dominance to make some people some money, Ari. You ready? Miami is an 8.5-point favorite against Appalachian State. If you watch that Alabama-Miami game, you probably think Miami stinks. I don't think Miami stinks. I think Miami's probably 8.5 points better than Appalachian State or more. And like last time when they went up to Appalachian State, that was one where I thought, oh, Appalachian State might have a chance. They got destroyed by Miami. And I would argue that Miami's a more talented roster now than it was then. And Appalachian State is a fine program. But Miami should be able to beat this team by 9 or 10 points at least. And I think this is a case of everybody looking at Miami like, oh, God, they got destroyed by Alabama. They must be awful. No, I think it's probably Alabama's that good.
Yeah. And Alabama has a funny way of making really good teams look bad. I mean, if anybody wants to, you know, watch what they do every week to the best teams in the country. You know, it is what it is. So I think I'm with you on this side. I think it's a critical time for Miami. You know,
well, they got Michigan State coming in. If Michigan State is the team we saw against Northwestern last week, that's a dangerous game for Miami.
I just think if you're a Miami fan, you want to see a 10-win season soon this year, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's a really tough thing to do. Listen, if you're a building program and you're trying to win back your fans and you're trying to instill hope with the people that you're recruiting and all, it's just a really, really crappy hand to be dealt that you're playing Alabama in week one, because nothing takes the wind out of your sails faster than getting blown out by somebody. But I do think that I agree with you in the sense that just because they lost by 100 to Alabama doesn't mean that they're not good for the level that they're supposed to be. I think teams that lose in the regular season to Alabama by, you know, 30 or whatever points, you know, prove to not be national championship contenders. But I don't know that Miami is actually in that conversation yet. They're in the conversation of being a pesky team in the ACC that flirts with 10 wins, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate description right now. All right, I want to go to a game that I know you love, and for once, I actually agree with you on this team. You are holding up the hook'em. Texas is a 7-point favorite at Arkansas.
Is that a trap?
It feels like a trap.
I'm not going to bet.
You and I both had the same reaction. Like, oh wow, only 7? Okay.
I'm tired of it. Every single week, I know that the line doesn't make sense. I bet into that line and then lose. It happened last week with North Carolina. Didn't make any sense to me. We said it on the show. Go back and check tape. It was just like, this line does not make sense. And they got their ass kicked. So it's just like, you know what? Part of me just wants to bet Arkansas just because of what's going on there. You know, they've got some tough talent. Their offensive line is pretty gritty. I mean, you went there. You wrote the Pittman story. You know what's going on there. Let me ask you this. If Texas would have opened up with Arkansas instead of Louisiana, would you have felt the same way about that game that you did with the Louisiana game?
I know Arkansas will play them tough. Arkansas is more talented than Louisiana. And you and I had this discussion on the show multiple times. Like, where Arkansas was last year in the 24/7 talent composite was shocking when we looked it up. They were like number 25. And so this was as bad as Chad Morris was at winning games. He was actually pretty good at getting players, and Sam Pittman did a good job coaching him up. But I think, well, a lot of it has to do with the way I feel about Texas, and the way I feel about Texas is different now after the way they beat the Raging Cajuns, because the Texas teams we've seen for the last like 8 years would have been more up for a game against Arkansas than they would have the Raging Cajuns. And they would have flopped against the Raging Cajuns, but would have been fine against Arkansas. In this case, they were up for the game against Louisiana. And I loved the way they handled it. I loved that Steve Sarkisian found a way to get the ball to the best player on the field and continually get him the ball. Bijan Robinson had 20 carries. He caught 7 passes. He scored a touchdown rushing and receiving. They fed the best player on the field the ball. And that means the defense has to account for him at all times. Before, the way they would rotate guys, you know, somebody would get hot and they just yank him and you wouldn't see him again for a quarter. Like, this looks like a more sustainable model here.
Andy, wasn't it just gloriously competent?
It was.
From start to finish?
It was. That's the best way to put it. I see you throwing up the hook'em. I got you. I'm with
They're
you.
They're back, baby. I'm saying it. They're back. No, I honestly, I'm not going to overreact here. I thought that Texas looked, they did exactly what you said that they had to do, and they did it in glorious fashion. You said that you'd be impressed if they won by 1 point. That game was never in question.
20. Yeah.
They won by a ton. They didn't look incompetent. They gave Bijan Robinson the football. Quarterback looked solid. Hudson Card, first-year starter.
His escapability.
There's a lot.
He takes care of the ball. Yeah.
I think it might be premature, and you can save this audio and make fun of me later, But I think that Texas has a very, very good chance to win the Big 12 this year. They are talented enough. If they are coached the right way and you get the most out of your team, which is what you're supposed to do when you get a new coach, give him the benefit of the doubt, right? New coach, new system, new ability to reach players and get them to buy into the system and reach their full potential. If you think that Sarkisian can do that, then I don't see why Texas, which has historically played very well in the Red River game, can't go out and potentially win that game and win the Big 12. And I'm sorry, I'm doing it again. I know I'm doing it again. Longtime Texas homer, but on paper, this team should be awesome. They got through a really tough early test without sweating. They're 7-point favorites against Arkansas. Like, I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm not seeing a game on there where I think it's a 100% loss. Are you?
No. Especially the way Oklahoma played against Tulane. You know, I'm off the Oklahoma's going to compete for the national title unless I see something different over the next few weeks. I mean, that game was way too close for my tastes. And obviously, look, it's week one. Maybe that was a fluke. But yeah, I'm with you. I was very impressed with the competence, and that seems repeatable. And
I'm more impressed by Texas's look than I'm discouraged by Oklahoma's look. I don't care about the Oklahoma game. That stuff happens.
Oh, I think one. Oklahoma can be fine. Yeah, exactly.
They'll be fine. But it's no problem. I'm more really fixated on the potential that Sark has the correct cocktail to get that roster bought in completely and playing to the best of its ability. Because the number one knock on Texas has always been two things. One, it doesn't develop its players for the NFL at a high enough level. And two, it doesn't play as a team and accomplish what it can accomplish based on the recruiting results that they should based on what that indicates. Yeah. So, you know, I think a new coach with the right ability should be able to turn that around. And Texas has been an 8-9 win team already. So how much more improvement do you need to potentially win the Big 12? Don't lose to Iowa State. Don't lose to TCU for the eighth time in 10 years or whatever the stat is. You know, beat the teams you're supposed to beat and give Oklahoma a run for its money in a rivalry game, which they've already done. I don't think it's that crazy to think it's a potential, you know, there. I don't know.
From your mouth to God's ears, Ari. From your Am mouth to God's ears.
Are you with me on this or?
I'm not going to buy into Texas quite. One game's not going to make me buy into Texas. They've burned me for several years. So
they burned us for a decade. Burned me for a decade.
I'm going to let this lie for a bit. Let's see if they can go into Fayetteville and do something similar. We got two more games. One game is a division game. It's the only conference game in this conference this week, and it happens to be a division game. I've been calling it a pecking order game. Basically, you know, kind of where do you fall? It is Missouri at Kentucky. Kentucky is a 5-point favorite at home. Will Levis gave me a great way to eat a banana. I am now fully on board with the Wildcats. And I mean, if you've been listening, you know I've been on board with them for a while. But this is the team I've been very high on in the offseason. I'm taking Kentucky in this one.
Is Missouri Kentucky, but just 2 years behind on the rebuild?
Could be. Now, listen, Kentucky has been so good on the offensive line in the last 4 or 5 years. And I realize a lot of that was an offensive line coach who unfortunately passed away last year. But they've done a really good job of finding and developing offensive linemen. And I think that is sort of the secret sauce to their rebuild. I don't know if Missouri is that good up front yet. Or is on pace to be that good up front. I mean, it's hard to do that. That's one of the hardest things to do in football is to build a good offensive and defensive line, especially when you can't recruit 5-star players. So I think that's the challenge for Missouri. But Missouri does have the quarterback. Connor Bazelak is one of those guys that you talk to a lot of people who played quarterback, they rave about him. They love the guy. He's a lot of people, a lot of ex-players' favorite quarterback in the SEC. And so that helps a lot. Levis looked good last week, but it was against ULM. You know, we don't know what he'll look like against better competition, but everything we saw was pretty promising.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. Also, Kentucky getting the game at home is a nice little piece of juice there. And, you know, mm-hmm. We both felt like this was an 8-9 win team this year, right?
I'm potentially revising that up. I let's see what they do in this game, and I want to see Florida for a few more weeks before I decide kind of how I feel about those two together. And obviously they'll play and tell us. But I'm curious because could Kentucky be a double digit win team? Is an interesting question. I don't think they can beat Georgia, but let's see how they do this week. If they handle Missouri pretty easily, then I might be on board with they can beat almost every team on their schedule, including that team that I gave you 15 points against UCLA.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how the context from week one is viewed in a month from now. But I'm all in on the UCLA train. Overreaction city over here.
All right. Last game, we think it might be the best game of the weekend. The Cy-Hawk Trophy on the line. Iowa at Iowa State. The Cyclones are a 4-point favorite. The money line, in case you're wondering, for Iowa, plus 150. Over under, 46. So basically, this is saying that this is going to wind up being an Iowa game and not an Iowa State game.
Everybody's on Iowa, by the way.
Which is probably the trap.
It always scares me when I like a line or I like something and everybody agrees with me.
Yeah.
But right now, I think that the clear cut viewpoint here is Iowa.
Watching Iowa dismantle Indiana last week felt very educational to me. Indiana is a well-coached team that has some very good players. Iowa made it look easy. And I realized there were some pretty critical turnovers. And if you look at the box score, it was not as lopsided as the final score was. But I'm sorry. Iowa, since they took those two weird losses at the beginning of last season, has been really good. And I have a hard time picking against them. Do you remember when the last time Iowa State won in this series was?
No, I don't, actually. Enlighten me.
2014.
It's really been that long?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the last time they played, they didn't play last year. That the last time they played was that 18-17 Iowa win that turned on a punt at the end. It was a weird, weird game. Before that, a 13-3 game that Iowa won, which doesn't look like Iowa State at all. And then the year before that was that crazy 44-43 game. So there have been some great games between these two teams, and I expect nothing less this week.
You know what's crazy? The Iowa schedule starts with back-to-back games against teams that I think were in very similar positions from a national perception standpoint. Indiana.
That are in Iowa State, teams that were good last year, but maybe got a couple of bounces and maybe wound up better in the record than they probably could have been.
And everybody expects them to back it up again and to do what they did again last year. But what both those two teams did last year was remarkable. And now they're both in a position where they were expected to duplicate that. And I don't know if duplicating the remarkable is something that I want to bank on. Exactly. And Iowa's a very good team in a rivalry game here. That's playing very good football, especially riding off the momentum of last year and the way that they finished the season. They kicked butt in the first week, and now they're playing the second team in consecutive weeks that has that perception of being good, but we're not necessarily sure that they are. And I mean, they're probably good for the standard of what that program had been, but to be nationally good, I think, is a completely different scenario. And it's also a lot harder to be good when people are expecting you to be good. It just is.
And Iowa has been nationally good. Not necessarily when any of these players were there, but it hasn't been that long. 2015, I would definitely say Iowa was nationally good. That was the year they went undefeated in the regular season and lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten championship game on like a classic 22 play drive by the Spartans. So I do think, Kirk Ferentz has been in this position before. He's been coaching a team that's getting a lot of hype, and obviously Iowa is getting a ton of hype after what they did in Indiana last week. But yeah, I feel like I got to take Iowa in this one, especially if I'm getting 4 points.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
All right. Well, this is one of those weeks, Ari, where you look at the list of games, you're like, I don't know about this. But then when you break it all down like we just did, this looks like a lot of fun.
Also, when the game schedules don't look that great and you're not excited about it, is often the weekends where they things go completely off the rails too. So let's keep that in mind as well.
Yeah. All right. Ari, I'm going to go eat another banana. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, you might want to grow a mullet too while you're out there.
All right, Shantz. 25 and a half. Get it done.